93.3 WMMR in Philadelphia. I'm Pierre Robert. Our guest this afternoon, it's safe to say, has music running through his veins and has since he was a very young child. Most people would know him through two of the giant bands he was a huge part of, certainly Guns N' Roses and Velvet Revolver, but there have been so many more musical projects through the years. If all of that's not enough, he's also a best-selling New York Times author. His last book in 2015 was called How to Be a Man and Other Illusions. He and another amazing musician by the name of Shooter Jennings have collaborated on what will be his third solo album. It's called Tenderness. We're also lucky because they start their tour introducing this music and this new record right here in Philadelphia at the TLA. Joined today by John Schreffler on guitar, it's a great pleasure to welcome Duff McKagan to WMMR.
Thank you, guys. I'd like to dedicate this song to Scott Weiland, Prince, Chris Cornell, and Chester Bennington. It's called Feel. You're here, still here. Somehow gone, brothers, sisters, and moms. Someone you love, he had enough. He went back to drugs, I guess he had enough. When the lights go down, you are still here, all you hold dear remain. I feel when the lights go down, you are still here, all you hold dear remain. Hard knocks, bad luck. You've been knocked down. You got back up. Rise up, shine on. You keep on fighting. The war is almost done. But then I hear you gone. When the lights go down, you are still here, all I hold dear remain. I feel when the lights go down, you are still here, all you hold dear remain.
I feel when the lights go down.
all you hold dear remain.
Song is called Feel from the latest album, Tenderness. Duff McKagan is with us and John Schreffler on guitar. I was going to save the heavier parts till later, but you opened by dedicating that to Chris Cornell, and the song is about a lot of those that we have lost over the last few years. Obviously, you knew Chris. What was your experience of Chris?
Yeah, except for Prince, I knew all those guys very well. Wow. And Chris, you know, I go back a long time. We're both from Seattle. So before I moved to L.A., I knew Chris. And early 80s, wow. We're the same age. Our wives were pregnant with our babies at the same time. Wow. So we had, you know, little babies together and did all that stuff, that new fatherdom, nerdy stuff you do, and have really great, wonderful memories of him. And still kind of find myself going, you know, I did a gig with him just a couple of years ago with McCready and Barrett Martin. We did a Mad Season wow. show, and Lane's gone.
Right.
So Chris filled Lane, and Baker, the bass player's gone. So I filled in Baker's slot, and we played with Seattle Symphony Mad Season at the Benaroya Hall. It was wow. amazing. So that was just, I mean, a couple of years ago. It seems it was 2015. So,
well, he sat in right where you were sitting and has played for us a number of times on this program. And I didn't know him well, but I was crushed by it. You know, and you could see that he had demons, as a lot of the people do that have been affected by addiction. And it seemed like he had conquered them. And then yet, you know, out of the blue comes, you know, this mystery as to what took place, as to, you know, why we lose him in Chester. And, you know, some of the others are a little more obvious, like, you know, Scott or even Prince. I didn't know that he had a drug problem, but, you know, we discover these things sometimes afterwards. But the ones that you think have dealt with the monsters, particularly Chris and Chester, come to mind, and then all of a sudden they haven't.
Yeah, I mean, it's something I deal with, and they're stark reminders to me to wake up every morning, look yourself in the mirror and go, okay, today is going to be a good day. And I keep it sitting over on the table. I recognize it. I look at it.
It being
addiction.
The monsters.
The monsters, yeah. You got to recognize it. If you ignore it, that's when you get into trouble, I've found.
You've personally. Been sober how long?
25 years.
Wow. That's great. That is deserves congratulations. How has sobriety affected your perspective on life?
It gave me life. I wouldn't have perspective. I'd be dead, for real.
Because you started really young.
Started very young, and I had a bad, my ending was pretty bad. Organs failed and whatnot. So there would not have been a continuation of me if I would have continued doing alcohol and drugs, for sure. So, man, I got my life back, and I knew it there in the hospital. And my doctor said, you've been given a second chance. And you know, seeing my mom, I'm the youngest of 8 kids. She had Parkinson's. I'm the one with tubes in the ICU, not her. I knew the order of things was wrong. I should be taking care of her. Those things changed me. And got into martial arts. 2 years in, I met my wife. We have 2 amazing kids. I've been able to do all this music and write books and write columns and go back to school, got a business degree at Seattle U. And,
so cool.
You know, just I could go on and on. But, you know, I can be a good father, and I'm sure about it. You know, I screw up, sure, sometimes, but I know I'm doing my best to be a good father.
It's not the screwing up, though. It's just the, okay, it was a mess up. Pick yourself back up.
We don't know what we're doing, man. Every day's a new day, you know, raising a kid. Like, I don't know how to raise a 17-and-a-half-year-old in 3 days, you know. I've never done this before.
You have 2 daughters. What are their ages?
21 and 18.
Wow. All right, so I want to talk about this record. Shooter Jennings, as he's just such an amazing musician, obviously the son of Waylon Jennings. But I'm always curious how musical forces come together, sometimes that you might not expect. And you and he connected. He moved to L.A., and I think he was a huge fan of GNR. But Where did you connect? How did you connect? And how did he want to get involved? Because he seemed, in the interviews I've read, just so eager to produce this record.
Yeah, luckily for me, because he's amazing at producing. And I met Shooter when he did move to L.A. in 2001 or so. His band Stargun opened for Loaded. I didn't know he was Waylon's kid at the time. I just saw him. I'm like, that guy right there, like, that's the one out of 10 who's going to be a lifer.
Wow. And
we remained friends. He went kind of from his hard rock band of Stargun and kind of went back where he came from, which was sort of the outlaw country thing. And then from there, he's experimented. Like, if you hear his record, Black Ribbons, he's done industrial stuff. He's done Giorgio Moroder, like, soundtracks.
Yeah, I saw that.
He just wrote the new Marilyn Manson record. The guy's all over the place.
John, you play guitar with both Duff and him. What's it like to work with Shooter?
Just like he said, it's great, and he's just a good, great overall sense of music and where things should go, how to get the right tones to portray the emotion that you want to portray, and just a good kind of professional mind, I suppose.
Had you ever worked together prior to
No,
this?
That's the thing. You know, we're friends, and when he came up to, his name came up to produce this record, I was going to write a third book. It's a very topical record. It's a concept record.
Because a lot of your fans thought that you would, after the last GNR tour you were on, you had made a lot of observations, and a lot of folks thought that would come out as the next book, but instead it translated to music. And I've always wondered why it came out musically rather than as in the written pages.
I mean, it doesn't make good radio, but I had my guitar in the rare chance that I was in my hotel room, because I'm always out. Seeing things and historical things and talking to people, and that's what I love to do. And I do have an acoustic guitar with me on the road. I was writing a lot of different pieces, and I had my acoustic guitar in my hotel room that 1 hour I was there, and I was looking at one of the things on my computer that I'd written, and it rhymed. So I started playing this thing. You know. Everybody's lying, I need some truth. And I was reading this thing and it rhymed, and I'm like, well, maybe I'd read some current topical books, important books, J.D. Vance's Hillbilly Elegy and Sarah Kandor's View from the Flyover Country. While I was on the road, I read a lot I just read a lot, period. And I thought maybe there was enough books out there about observations. I thought it like a more austere, sort of gentle record, something I've wanted to do for a long time anyhow, would be a better way to have a conversation.
Right.
And finding Shooter to produce his record, once he got my demos, which are really crappy garage band, you know, on your Mac, they're the worst sounding demos, but the songs are there. And he heard the songs, and he was in, and John and the band played on the record, and they really, what they did for the songs, they seemed to understand, like, all the way to their core, the meanings are my intentions behind the songs, and did such an amazing job performing.
It sounded like he was really helpful in the studio, too. You said he helped your vocal process, all sorts of things.
Just when you're relaxed and it's cool and the people you're around, he had confidence. You know, I'm not, I sing in Loaded, but that's my adult punk rock band. You know, I'm screaming at people, like, are you with me? And it's different. So this was a lower voice. Calmer, enunciate the words, that kind of thing.
Well, you're telling a real clear story in each of these songs, too.
Trying to.
And I think it lends itself more to this more acoustic, or not necessarily acoustic, but a quieter presentation. One of the things you said just now was something I had noted, that I've met a lot of artists who have traveled the world, hugely successful, and will tell you that they haven't seen any of the world. Mm. They've been all over the world, but they really haven't seen it. And
sobriety, my friend.
Well, a couple of that I know are sober, but that the grind of the road and that, you know, that back and forth and run always sometimes prevents them from getting out and experiencing. And you've made it a point to do that in these various communities. And I love that you do that. And since we're in and you're kicking off the tour in Philly, I'm wondering if over the past you have done that in this city and what you might have discovered here.
Philly, what have I done here? I mean, I do here. I just do the
Liberty Bell.
I do, man. I mean, the history here, you know, the Constitution, and there was a Congress formed here, you know, before there was a president. So they had this Congress. Do you know this, right? Like, think about it. There was a Congress first.
It all happened down the street.
It all happened down the street, and they had to figure out, like, okay, how are we going to have a president? What are the terms going to be? How much power can they have? What if he's a knucklehead? Like, what is their provisions, you know? And these guys wrote it here. So that stuff really interests me.
Do you get out and walk in a given city?
I do. Sometimes I'll go to different cities that I'm not playing in. Oh. Say we're playing Denver. Our routing sometimes is pretty screwy. So we'll play Denver and then Little Rock, Arkansas, which are not close to each other. I'll let you know that if you're not good at geography. They're not close. But Kansas City's in between, so it's a two-day drive. So I'll stop in World War I museums in Kansas City. So I can go to a city that I'm not playing at, go to lunch with the FM DJ I know from Kansas City, and go to the World War I museum, talk to a bunch of people there. I'm a nerd when it comes to all that stuff. I probably talk too much like I am right now.
Tut, 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 my friend.
Yeah.
A lot of museums here, too, by the way. As you mentioned, a lot of history, but there's a Revolutionary War Museum, the Constitution Center, a lot of art. I don't know how much art interests you.
I do. My wife – so then I have my wife, which is a whole other story. She'll have like 11 things for us to do a day. We can't do 11 things. I'll have you know. We get to like two of them. But yeah, a lot of art museums around the world and Little Bighorn, Monticello, the swamps of Louisiana. Every time I go to D.C., I see something new. I saw my, I don't know how old you are. Jeff, you had to sign up for a selective service. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
So I got my selective, and I was a punk rock kid. So it's 1980. So I drew, like, I think a bomb, and I'm telling my manager, like, I drew, like, this, like, anti- stuff on it, you know, and we went to the National Archives, and the woman there, you can pull out your thing. They have everything. So they pulled out, made a copy, pulled it out, and there was the little bomb, and like I had like peace on there, probably Anarchy A or something. Who knows what I had on there? But I do stuff like that.
That's great. The first single from the record is called Chip Away. I really love it. It's a great first single. It's catchy and relatable. But as I understand, a portion of it is about your view of the division that exists in the country and how cable news contributes to that, in your opinion.
Well, so I got sucked down the rabbit hole that everybody, I think, did. Maybe October 2015. A friend of mine was a campaign manager for John Kasich, and he said, watch my guy. He's really cool. He's really done great things for Ohio. So I watched that. There was like 12 Republicans on the, you know, it was like first debate. I watched that, and I'm watching the Democratic debate. I'm just, and I vote every year. I voted since I was 18. I vote every little
good
local election, everything.
Good for you.
Well, it's we the people, right?
Yeah.
So I'm watching all this stuff, and I'm starting to switch between news channels, and they're talking about this divide. And I'm like, oh, this divide. Like, okay, man, we're in trouble. Look at this divide. And I start following I fall down the rabbit hole. And I do read a lot of history. And they're just selling ads. I know this, right? They start bringing panels on that start yelling at each other, and like you – this must be keeping people drawn to the TV.
I watch a lot of it, too. I hate when they're yelling at each other, though, or talking over each other.
Well, I did this, and I followed all the people on Twitter, and I would look at the Twitter, and my wife's like, what are you doing? And we started rehearsing for Guns tour, and then we went out on tour, and I turned off all the news. Didn't have Yahoo as my homepage. And muted everybody on Twitter except for the Seattle Seahawks and the Seattle Mariners. Why I got Twitter in the first place, you know, so I could follow my teams. The Mariners, following the Mariners is a hard thing to do, by the way. But that's why I got Twitter, to follow my teams when I'm away. And my life got, I turned it all off and I just started going out and talking to people. We started in America. And you know what? I noticed, like, they were talking about red states and blue states and all this stuff. And across state lines, and there's no red and there's no blue. And I'm talking to people and all across the country. And nobody talks about politics. Nobody's that base. Nobody's making a comment to you like they would on Twitter. Like, you suck. You know, he says that, you know. And what I realize is we all work together. We all coexist. We all want the same things, like feed our families, our kids to do well, have some happiness in our life, be able to follow your NFL team or whatever you got.
But if you think about it, politics is just like sports.
This is the newest, and I read so much history, the divisive.
Or like music. This is the best band. No, you're wrong. This is the best band. We still can go to a concert together.
Totally.
This team's the best. No, you're wrong. You're an idiot. This team's the best. But we'll go to the game together and drink a beer. In other words, there's so much more that unites us once you get below that surface level.
So much more that unites. I really found, and this is just like personal research, I was going to write this book about this. Like, there's so much more that we have in common than what separates us, not only in America, but around the whole world. Like, great images in my head. We got to play these shows where if there's any, and there's a lot of labels, right? You're in the bubble. And the only bubble I was in was like, we're playing these shows where nobody asks who you vote for when you come in because nobody cares. You know, we're here to rock. And it's this united thing of the band and the crowd together in this thing. And in America, it was great. Europe, South America, we played, you know, Muslim countries, Kuala Lumpur, and we played Abu Dhabi and Dubai, where like full head covered women with the devil horns up, rocking out, just like the guy in Little Rock, Arkansas. And you know, you really, so this song really kind of talks to that about, and I, so once I turned off the news, and I really suggest this, like I went to the gym today at the hotel. And it had, I was on the elliptical and had the TV that was on, and it was on like one of the cable news.
Right.
And I turned it to like National Geographic because I got, like, I took out, I couldn't work out as hard. It was on and it had the closed caption on, right, so I could read it. And I just, I can't do it. It's not going to affect my life today. It's not. And it is we, the people, we're supposed to be running this stuff, and we're just kind of, I feel like, you know, we'll be mad about something else completely different in 2 years. Don't worry about it, you know? So I really saw a really positive. I left the news behind and just saw it was another tool. The latest one is divisiveness. It works great on news, keeps you glued to the TV. It works great in politics right now, you know? There'll be some other ruse in a couple of years.
Well, with that in mind, could we get you to play that song?
Yeah. 1, 2, 3. Talking heads are making dollars. It's like doing crack day after day. Dropping taxes on business ballers. It'll work this time, they say. Gotta rise up, gotta keep on fighting. You know we've seen this all before. This too shall stop if we keep our heads on. It'll work this time, they say. Chip away, chip away. I'm withdrawing. Chip away, gonna pray for something new. Chip away, chip away. Can you hear me calling? Gonna wait. Ray has had some great men, some badass who wouldn't bend to this. FDR would laugh, Martin Luther would holler. Oh, hey, he put an end to this. Chip away, chip away. I'm withdrawing. Chip away, gonna pray for something.
something new. Chip away, chip away. Can you hear me calling? Get away, dear, this is true. Come on, John. Nowadays, the earth is flat, or so they say. Living beings came to be all of a sudden one day. Now, white is right, the rest is wrong. I'll scratch on that and keep moving on. This'll pass this time, just wait. Chip away, chip away. I'm withdrawing. Chip away, gonna pray for something new. Chip away, chip away. Can you hear me calling? Gonna wait till this is through. Chip away, chip away. I'm withdrawing. Chip away, gonna pray for something new. Chip away, chip away. Can you hear me calling? Gonna wait till this is true. And I hope you won't get fooled.
Thank you.
Duff McKagan here on 93.3 WMMR. I wanted to ask you if it's true. I had read that the core of what became Guns N' Roses, and I think that turned into a band called Road Crew, but came about as a result of you answering an ad in a local paper put there by Slash and I think Steven Adler. Is mm-hmm. that where the very beginnings of the band came from?
Two different beginnings was that. Yeah, I just moved to L.A., saw this ad in the Recycler, which is a paper that you can buy dishwashers and junker cars and or join a band.
No internet, though.
There was no internet, no. So I called the number, and the guy's name's Slash. My name's Duff. He liked Alice Cooper, Aerosmith, and Fear. That's what it said. So I love Fear. I love Aerosmith and Alice Cooper. Great. And we met at kind of around the same time Izzy moved across the street from me. And I'd seen Axl, Slash took me to see Axl play in when he really early version of LA Guns. And I saw this guy come out on stage with Axl. And I backed up a couple feet because he looked terrifying. And then he starts singing and he broke a glass. And he reminded me of the guys the people I really looked up to, which was like Henry Rollins at the time, Iggy Pop. Just that ferocity where you do back up a couple feet and like, there's something wrong here. But I like it, you know. So it was kind of a mishmash of I got to meet Slash and Slash and Steven knew Axl and they knew Izzy. It was everybody just kind of moved there, at least Axl and Izzy and myself. And we were there. You don't move to L.A. to mess around. If you're a musician, we were going to, you know, make our mark and do our thing. And
I think it's safe to say you did.
Yeah.
You've worked with some very eccentric, you could certainly say that, front men. Another one is Scott Weiland in Velvet Revolver. And Scott was on this program many times. And I just loved him. He had such a beautiful soul. And yet it seemed like, you know, after the second album, and by the way, you guys played one of our festivals, is Velvet Revolver, and you in Loaded played another one of our MMRBQs. But Scott, eventually he left the band and the band for a while was looking for another lead singer, and then it seemed like it kind of fell apart. But what was your take on Scott Weiland?
Oh.
I mean, it's maybe too complicated for a brief interview, but if you were to summarize it in a couple of sentences.
See, I can't.
Okay.
Because it's such a long trajectory. We met as fathers. He was still having problems with the drugs. He asked me if I could help him get sober through the way I did, which is martial arts. So I said, okay, we're going to go away. And we went away for a month up into the mountains. And he got clean, and we started Velvet Revolver. And the first record of that was amazing because we were all on, you know, and he was on. And second record, he started dabbling again. And we had the conversations you have if you're sober men in your 40s. which is, you're going to die. You know, if you do this, you're going to die. That's just the plain truth. Your body can't handle it. We're not 21 anymore. And so we did have those conversations, for sure. And what was the final outcome? I mean, back of a bus in a parking lot in Minnesota, right, somewhere.
Is it true that Shooter Jennings was asked on a couple of occasions to be a part of or even front the band? I don't know if that was post or pre-Scott.
That was pre-Scott. Yeah, he didn't. What's the story? He just said, "Oh man, I didn't want to do it. I was like too scared of you guys."
Were you working with him then, John?
No, I was not. But I don't really know. Yeah. I'd assume maybe just intimidated a bit, maybe. But
yeah, he
knows?
I mean, I know now because he's told me. Like, he came to L.A. What got him into rock was a few records. The first Nine Inch Nails records and the two Illusions records and some other record, which I don't know. So I think he was just like, I'm not going to do that. It's like those guys. Scott was a wonderful, wonderful guy. And when he was on, he was a wonderful father and a great husband.
A beautiful
but when
soul.
Just a great guy. You interviewed him. You know him. He's that's him.
The first time he came here was right after he had been in recovery for a month or so, and he was so vulnerable, you know. But it was when the Four record came out from STP, and there was beautiful songs in there, Sour Girl and things like that. And he was trying so hard, and your heart just went out for him to have success, and you know, and it was a difficult challenge. Another guy I wanted to ask you about was
the Inquisition here, man.
Well,
what do you got?
Just you've touched some. This is a fun one, though.
Okay.
And this guy is so loved. His name is Alice Cooper.
And oh,
you,
man.
You have been a part of the Hollywood Vampires. For those who don't know, tell us what the Hollywood Vampires.
So, yeah, I was a part of that. I guess I am for life. Alice tells me I'm a vampire for life now. So Joe Perry, Aerosmith, Alice, Johnny Depp, who's a hell of a guitar player. You know, he moved to L.A. to be in a rock. He moved with his rock band.
And really?
The same year I moved. Yeah. And they just weren't, it wasn't cutting it. And he got this commercial, and it paid him like $4,000. So he said, go try it for this commercial. He's like, I don't know how to act. And it paid $4,000. So back in 84, $4,000 paid for his crappy apartment for like 6 months. And then he got the part in whatever his first movie was, horror movie. Anyhow, he kept playing guitar the whole time. And he's great. Joe Perry, Tommy from Alice's band. And it was Matt Sorum and myself. We went and played Rock and Rio. We played the Rocks. We played, I think, the Grant. We played.
But originally, the Hollywood Vampires had been an entity back in, was it late 60s?
Early
70s? Early 70s, yeah. John Lennon.
And it was just a group of guys having fun, basically, right? But kind
if
of
If they
kind
remember
of a,
it, yeah.
But kind of a you know, of a clique, in a way.
It was a party club.
All right.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was all the guys, you know. I think Alice is the last left standing of that original Vampires group.
Huh.
Keith Moon.
Keith was part of it?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that speaks volumes.
Yeah, yeah. It was that. It was that. That was the Hollywood Vampires.
Well, Alice was a wild man before he got sober.
Right. But I mean, I can't say enough about him, his wife Cheryl, his whole family. Like, if you're friends with Alice, it's a real gift because he does give himself
And a hell of a golfer, too.
That's what I understand.
We had a golf tournament. He came and played in it, and I think he won. Amazing golf tournament.
I think he's a scratch golfer, right? Or like a one handicap or something.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I don't even know what that means. But
that means you're really good.
Okay. A couple more things before we let you go. Talking about your family and the way you travel the world, you said that you and your wife, Susan, are attempting to keep your daughters raised as what you call world citizens. What do you mean by that?
Well, that's what we all are.
But we don't think often that way.
Well, so because they're my kids and I travel for a living, I got to go places to work, right? And a lot of places are in America, but a lot of places are also not America. So it's South America, it's Asia, it's Europe, it's Africa. And the girls grew up going with me and seeing other cultures and, you know, realizing that it's not just Seattle, Washington is the world. And there's other cultures and other things that have their own thing that they believe just as hardly about as we do in our thing. So I think they got to open their minds a little bit and kind of understand that this is a global community. You know, we're welcomed into a village in outside of Johannesburg by 3 hours, a little village of people that have lived there for thousands and thousands of years. Don't know even who Guns N' Roses is, you know, and being welcomed in as family just because we were visiting and they wanted to be cool and show off where they live. You know, things like that really change your perspective of where you're this is where I'm from, man. You know, like, I love being from Seattle. I got it tattooed on me, man.
But it speaks to the unification, the differences that we can all feel, but the unity that is stronger than any of the differences.
Yeah, I mean, we all came from one place, and the sporia of human beings just happen to spread around the world, you know, but we're all in this together.
I love the word dysphoria.
Thank you.
Yeah. Can we get you guys to do one more song before you depart?
We're going to try something.
Want to tell us about it?
So, I was telling you, I did the Mad Season thing with Chris. I didn't sing. Chris sang. He's a pretty good singer. I'm going to make an attempt. This is our version of Mad Season's River Deceit.
Wow.
2, 3, 4. My pain is self-chosen. At least, so the prophet said. I could either burn out, cut off my pride and buy some time. A head full of lies is the way tied to my way. The river of the sea flows down on. The only direction and falls is down, down, oh down, down, oh down, down, oh down, down, oh down. My pain is self-chosen. At least I believe it to be. I could either drown or pull off my skin and swim to shore. Now I can grow a beautiful shell for all to see. The river of the sea pulls down on.
blows is down, down, oh down, down, oh down, down, oh down, down, oh down. My pain is self-chosen. Our pain is self-chosen. Down, oh down. Down, oh down. Down, oh down, down, oh down.
Duff McKagan, joined by John Schreffler. Two more things in the tour that you guys are launching here in Philadelphia. Will you do just the new album? Will you throw older things in there? Or have you figured it out yet?
We have figured it out. Yeah, there's going to be some surprises, some really cool things
like that you just did.
Maybe example. Like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Perhaps.
Okay.
Because Shooter loves Illusions so much, there might be a couple things that we don't play at all, or maybe never have. Guns, that is.
Right.
So we're exploring around.
Cool.
But tonight's the test. And the record's not out, so I think the people there tonight, unless they somehow got an advance, they only know perhaps the three songs that come out. But I'm really excited to do this, and the tour and the record and the band, it's all, like, the intention is super positive, and I'm looking forward to tonight.
When you were starting this process on tour with GNR, you said your soul and spirit were at ease. Is that the way you still feel?
I do.
It's a pretty good place to be.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, my kids are good. My band is good in both GNR and this thing. And my wife is killer. I love her to death. And I can't breathe without her. And that's a good place to be.
Wow. John, thank you for your time. John Schreffler, amazing guitar player.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right. Yeah. Thanks, John.
And Duff McKagan, the new album is Tenderness, and we're lucky to have had you visit us here at 93.3 WMMR. Thank you.
Thanks for having me back. All right. Thanks, guys. Dude.
We did it.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.